party tonight! TV party tonight!
Oh! We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my circuits.
Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Scary Dog.
Larson at Blurzball.
Futurama.
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattlegion Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, our favorite show is Transformers, The War for Cybertron Trilogy, Part 1, Siege, brought to you by the good people at Hasbro and Netflix. Joining me tonight, from the Film Twit on Twitch. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard him on Source Material. Now he's taking a walk on the wild side here on TV Party Tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Cole Marantet. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I've been anxious to talk about this for a while with somebody who's big in the Transformers. And you are big in the Transformers, correct?
Yes, I am. For quite some time now.
So, tell me about when you came to... Now, I'm 44 years old. I played with the Generation 1 Transformers as a kid when they were die-cast metal, and if you hit somebody over in the head with it, you'd give them a concussion. I didn't mess around with this plastic nonsense, though my son, who is now 6, for the first couple years of his life, he got a bunch of the really easy-to-transform, don't-move-a-lot, rescue bots type Transformers. When did you come to the franchise?
Well, I have vague memories of having some Generation 2 figures when I was real, real little. I had like a Grimlock and some Decepticon car that shot water. But I really got into the franchise in the Beast Wars era. That was right when I was of an age to appreciate the quality of the show and how much care went into it. I wasn't too old for cartoons, but I wasn't so young that I didn't notice the dedication. And so that's really what got me into Transformers. And from there, I sort of went back to some of the G1 stuff, and I've followed it ever since. I'm a collector. It's basically just become part of my day-to-day.
Is the Transformers the motion picture one of your favorite movies like it is mine?
The original 85 one?
Yeah.
Yes. I love Robot Star Wars.
That's funny. Let me ask you another... Now, I think you were on the show that we... The Source Material show that we did Revolution, which was the mashup of various Hasbro properties. And I think you were like the expert that was... I think you're the one that got me into wanting to read All Hail Megatron, because you had been reading whatever comic book company this was that was putting out these Transformer books, correct?
Yeah, IDW.
Right. When did you get into reading the IDW books?
I had been toying with reading them in the lead up to All Hail Megatron, and then a buddy of mine said, that one of my other Transformers friends said, you've got to read All Hail Megatron. So I read it, and it was fantastic, and I've been following the comics ever since. Not slavishly, like I haven't until recently been buying them every month, but there are certain comic lines that I've read most, if not all, of their continuity from IDW.
All right, so Transformers War for Cybertron Trilogy was announced on Netflix, and... It was a... I thought these were going to be movies. These were actually broken up into 22-minute episodes, I think 6 apiece. And so far, we've gotten through Siege. And that's labeled as Chapter 1 on the wiki. Cybertron has been ravaged by the civil war between the Autobots and Decepticons. In an attempt to end the conflict, Megatron considers using the Allspark as a last resort. But Optimus Prime wants to prevent that from happening, even if that means destroying Cybertron in order to save it. So, first, let me ask you, when they announced this, were you excited for it?
I was very excited. I'm a collector of the toys, and the toy line came out first. and so I was picking up the Siege figures here and there, and then I found out there was going to be an animated series based on these figures, which were very cool, and that got me hype as hell.
I didn't know who half of these people were. Like, I obviously I knew who Wheeljack was, I knew who Bumblebee was, obviously Optimus Prime, but the one woman who he keeps interacting with that isn't RC, I'm trying to find her in the voice cast list. I had no idea who she was.
That she was actually a character in G1 for a single episode that I can recall.
What is her name?
Alita One.
Alita, yeah, okay. Right, okay, who's played by Lindsay Rousseau. And she's in all six episodes, and I haven't the faintest idea what this character is. So tell me about Alita One.
Well, Alita One was, for lack of a better term, Optimus Prime's girlfriend. Back on Cybertron, before he became Optimus Prime, he and Alita One were... They weren't romantically involved because it was a cartoon for kids and they didn't really get into that kind of thing, but effectively, she was his girlfriend. And she showed up in, like I said, one, maybe two episodes, and she just caught on with the fans ever since because she was one of the first female Transformers, because she actually predates RC.
Okay. Was she on the original afternoon television show that I grew up with?
She was. Like I said, she was in, like, maybe a handful of episodes. I think it was only one or two.
Because they didn't go up to Cybertron much.
No.
In the iteration that I watched. They did after the movie, but then, you know, but then the major female character after the movie was RC.
Right.
Okay. So, this kind of follows the cartoon, the afternoon cartoon history of the planet, that there was a civil war that was going on, where we pick it up, Optimus and the Autobots are fleeing Cybertron, and they crash on Earth. I don't think the Allspark was introduced at the time, but this siege sets a... And you jump in here at any time. It seems like they've drawn on the history that was set up in that cartoon, where there was a civilization of Transformers. It got upended by both Optimus Prime and Megatron, who were working in unison, kind of destroying their caste system, I guess, as it was. Mm-hmm. And then Megatron went one way, Optimus Prime went another, and a civil war broke out. And by the end of the civil war, Cybertron was bereft of any kind of energy. They were, like, basically they had burned all the crops. And
pretty much, yeah.
And they were at a flashpoint where they weren't sure what to do next, and Optimus was like, we gotta go out in search of Energon. And then I think the Decepticons followed them in their own ship. That's kind of what we get here. We get, over the course of six episodes, we have the Decepticons wanting to... And I'll just start with episode one here. Megatron urges Optimus Prime to accept a treaty, while Starscream questions Jetfire's leadership. So we also get the backstory of how Jetfire came to defect from the Decepticons. And the Autobots try to recruit Bumblebee to their side. Now let me ask you right up front. What did you think of their use of Bumblebee here as a scrapper and a non-committed... person here did not want to be a part of the war, as opposed to the way he's always been portrayed as sort of Optimus Prime's, like, go-to guy?
I really enjoyed it. This was one of the few things that I thought the series did drastically differently. Like, they were pretty safe, as far as I'm concerned. We'll get into that a little later. They were pretty safe in a lot of their characterization, but making Bumblebee this unaligned Energon scrapper who was just in it for himself, he didn't care about the Civil War, he just wanted to survive, was a bold choice, especially coming from a character like Bumblebee, who everyone expects is going to be, you know, the child insert friendly everyman robot.
Yeah, I thought it was a breath of fresh air to the character. You know, especially after the Michael Bay movies and the way, you know, Bumblebee in the cartoon, in the afternoon cartoon from the 80s, was aligned with Spike and I can't remember who the other character was, the other human character, but they were sort of your point of view characters in the show. Everybody else was like, you know, a soldier of some kind. They were more war weary. And then you had the sort of bright, optimistic Bumblebee. And this, they turned that all around and made him very sardonic and, you know, and they made him war-weary and just sort of jaded and not wanting to have anything to do with Optimus Prime or Megatron. And I was like, wow, that's an interesting interpretation of that character.
Right. Like I said, it was a real breath of fresh air. I really enjoyed the liberties that they took with that character.
What did you think of them getting into Jetfire's history? Did you like the portrayal of Jetfire as somebody who was dedicated to the philosophical cause of the Decepticons, but struggling with its current leadership and, you know, some of the specific choices they were making on the ground?
Well, that was a cool nod to G1 because. In G1, he was originally a Decepticon too, and he defects. But I thought it was interesting that they made him a true believer, whereas in the original cartoon, he was basically part of the Decepticons because he was a friend of Starscream.
Were you able to pick up in any way what exactly the philosophical problems between Prime and the Autobots and Megatron and the Decepticon are? The impression that I got was that there was, like I said, this caste system that existed, and that among Prime and Megatron, there were these sort of laborious / warrior Transformers, and they were kind of, I don't want to say slaves, but they seemed to have been operating without any kind of representation in the upper caste of Transformer society. And so they revolted, as that tends to happen.
Right.
But what was the thing that drove Megatron and Prime apart once that part of the revolution was over? Were you able to pick that up?
It's kind of vague in the series. I only know what I know because of outside sources, like the comics and stuff like that. But if they keep with what happens in the comics, in the series, it's basically an ideological difference. Optimus Prime believes that everyone should be free. Megatron sort of believes in upending the caste system and installing himself and the laborers as the ruling class.
Yeah, so replacing one dictatorship with another.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, what do you think of the animation and the look of these? Normally, we're used to seeing the Transformers look very clean and shiny, and here they're all cracked and crackly. They look ravaged in a lot of ways. They look like they've been in a civil war, which I thought was an interesting, a bold choice for the animators.
It was, I think, very much in keeping with the tone of the series. The tone of the series is a tone of a war that has already been lost. And so the idea of having these characters already banged up and low on energon and basically been put through the ringer before we even get to meet them was a good visual metaphor for the state of things when the series starts off.
Episode 2, Megatron receives a surprise visitor, Shock, which is, I believe that ends up, spoilers, that ends up being Ultra Magnus. Shockwave reveals how finding the mythical Allspark can help defeat the Autobots, and the Decepticons lay a trap. So, I think early on, another division of philosophy, you have Ultra Magnus and Optimus Prime, definitely a departure from how their relationship is portrayed in the movie. And Ultra Magnus goes to Megatron to see if peace can be salvaged, if there's any way out of this war besides headlong into death. So I got to ask you, were you surprised by that? Were you shocked that Ultra Magnus, in a way, betrayed the Autobots? Is that in line with what you've seen in other portrayals of him?
No, it was very, very out of I don't want to say out of character, because this is a new continuity and a new starting point. But in keeping with the way Ultra Magnus has been portrayed in the past, he's the Autobot true believer. He's the commander of the armies, and he believes in fighting the Decepticons and defeating them and driving them off from Cybertron completely. And to see him,
let me jump in here. And that's the thing about this, is that Optimus Prime is usually portrayed as like Jesus on wheels. Like nobody, you know, he is almost worshipped by the Autobots. And this iteration, Ultra Magnus is a symbol of a lot of Autobots not trusting Optimus Prime anymore, feeling like he's led them down a gilded path, that, you know, he's just led them into endless war. And so there's a lot of like undercutting of Optimus Prime in this show, which was really surprising to me.
Yeah, that was something that I was going to bring up as well. Just the fact that Optimus Prime is fallible. He's not this be-all, end-all great leader. He's made mistakes, and he continues to make mistakes as the series goes on, because he's almost as blind as Megatron, just in a different way.
What did you think of episode 2? Was there any high points, low points, things you want to talk about?
I think the only thing that I really want to discuss is they did a really good job, quote-unquote, hiding Ultra Magnus's identity at the end of episode 1, beginning of episode 2, because you've got this hooded cloak on, and it's like, oh, who could it be? And he's got the big shoulder pylons sticking out and the missiles, and it really couldn't be anyone but Ultra Magnus. And I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Just that they went the anime route of the hooded cloak to hide his identity, and it was the worst possible obfuscation I've ever seen in a cartoon.
Yeah, they didn't do a great job of hiding the pylons. Episode 3. Optimus has a plan but needs Ratchet's help. Ultra Magnus is tortured for information while Starscream continues to foster dissent among the Seekers. Yeah, I love Starscream in this. You know, no matter where you find Starscream, no matter what iteration of Transformers, he's always a he is a universal constant.
He really is. Starscream's one of my favorite characters, and they just, they hit the nail on the head with this version of Starscream.
Yeah, Starscream is always, you know, he's always wanting to either suck up to or replace Megatron. You know, always, he always comes across like, I'm always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Why can't, you know, what about me? What about Raven? That's all Starscream. So Ratchet is written as somebody who's out there kind of, you know, he's the, I've seen this in other shows where he's basically like operating like a clinic in the ghetto to try to help people. And that he's lost his faith in the war, in the leadership, in Optimus Prime, and he just wants to be a doctor. He wants to be a doctor, Cole, and he wants to help people. And I think this is where they've introduced the Space Bridge, which is a giant teleporting machine, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And they need Ratchet's help to fix it. And Ratchet's like, I don't want any part of anything you do. And they're like, okay, but you also don't want to be in an endless war, so help. So that way we can use the space bridge to get out of here and maybe figure out what to do next. And I love the Ratchet character in this. I'm used to seeing all the Autobots just fall neatly in line with Optimus Prime. And it was fun to see characters that were like, Optimus Prime, ugh. what has he ever done to help anybody? So that was Ratchet.
There's an impressive amount of nuance in this show that you wouldn't expect from a Transformers show.
Yeah, I don't know if you've got kids, but I've got a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old. And the 9-year-old, if she cared, I might have let watch this. But I can't see showing this to anyone under the age of 9.
No.
Like, this is a dark show.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because I think it's like Y7. And I'm like, really?
This Y7 show about the horrors of war and how no one is correct.
Yeah.
And how the battle destroys everyone. Yeah, that's Y7. That's appropriate for a younger audience.
Yeah, I don't. This needs a different rating scale, because this is. I felt that the content definitely lended itself towards an older audience, even though it's about about a bunch of transforming trucks and planes, but still, like, this is written with such grit and such gravity that I can't imagine a child enjoying it.
No, just thematically, it's just so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
That you wouldn't get this on Saturday morning. Like, this is not the Transformers. Even the darker and more adult tones of, like, Beast Wars didn't get this far until the very end.
I want to say this almost matches the tone of G.I. Joe Resolute. Did you ever watch that?
I didn't. I've never been a G.I. Joe fan.
Okay. I want to say G.I. Joe Resolute was written for the G.I. Joe fan that grew up with G.I. Joe but was now older and, you know, and an adult and still likes G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I vaguely remember, and it's been a while since I've watched a lot of this stuff, but I vaguely remember G.I. Joe Resolute being not for children. Anything else about episode 3 would you want to talk about?
Well, it was around this time that it had been kind of sticking in the back of my head the whole first two episodes, but it was around episode 3 that I noticed the voice acting. All the Decepticons have a real bad case of bad guy voice.
They all talk like this, and they have no inflection other than just being grim and gritty, and
you get a decent spread across the Autobots of voice types. But even Jetfire, who's like this kind of idealistic, believes in the Decepticon cause but not necessarily Megatron,
even he speaks like this.
It's really jarring at times.
Yeah. I think there were times where I looked away from the TV during some of the... Funny you mentioned that. During some of the Decepticon stuff, and it just felt like, you know, one nameless Decepticon talking to another. And in some cases, I knew who they were by how they looked. But, like, you know, like, I don't remember. I remember, like, there's, like, a Thundercracker, you know, obviously Starscream, but who doesn't know who Starscream is? And
right.
And if you asked me to name the other iterations of the airplane Decepticons that are called the Seekers in this show, I couldn't do it. I remember Thundercracker. That's about it.
Yeah, I only know them because I'm versed in the lore. And so I can look at the character and go, oh, that's Thundercracker. Oh, that's Skywarp. But if you just sat me down with no prior knowledge and asked me to differentiate the Seekers, not a chance.
Isn't one of them called Ramjet?
Yeah, Ramjet doesn't actually show up. Well, he probably shows up in the background, but he doesn't actually show up as a face character in this.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Astrotrain in this at some point?
I don't remember seeing Astrotrain. He might have been in the background somewhere, but
okay.
I don't remember seeing him.
I feel like in the second half, when they're dealing with the space bridge, and I'm looking through the voice cast, and yeah, Thundercracker, Mirage is what's his face? Moonracer, I don't know who Chromia is. okay, yeah, not a lot in the way of bad guy voices in this thing. So yeah, but probably a lot in the background, you know, or doing some sort of action but having no actual dialogue. All right, episode 4. Alita casts doubt on Optimus's plan. All right, so fill everybody in. What is Optimus's plan? And by the time we get to episode 4,
honestly, other than find the Allspark and get it off of Cybertron, I could never keep Optimus's plan straight.
Yeah, that's why I defaulted to you, because I'm like, search me. It was repair the space bridge, get the Allspark off, and shmageggy.
Yeah, profit somehow. like, again, I had to... That's one of the failings of this series, is I had to pull on outside knowledge to make things make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they mentioned the Sea of Rust, and I know what the Sea of Rust is because it's in the comics. But your average viewer you know, Sea of Rust, what the hell is a Sea of Rust?
Yeah, I kept thinking the Junkions were going to show up.
Right. But yeah, Optimus's plan, again, based on prior knowledge, is go find Energon somewhere else. But I don't think he ever once puts that forward as even an idea.
You know who Optimus reminds me of? And I don't know if you watched the show or not to get this reference, but Sabrina the Teenage Witch. He is one of these. He is one of these characters who is dedicated to helping. He wants to fix things. He is absolutely. And if you've ever watched Sabrina the Teenage Witch, this is like the driving force of that show. She is trying to fix things, and the more she tries to fix it, the more plans she concocts, the worse things get.
Oh yeah, totally. That's 100% Optimus in this show. He just can't win for losing.
Yeah, and he's losing followers by the moment.
Yep.
Anything else about episode 4 that you want to talk about? The description is fix the space bridge. Optimus appeals to the Guardians, which I think goes nowhere, and Bumblebee receives a high honor, and that's about it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Spoilers, it ends up going nowhere. But I thought it was interesting that they chose Bumblebee to receive the, I don't even remember what it was called, but like the Mark of Alpha Trion.
Yeah.
All the combined knowledge of Cybertron, they gave it to Bumblebee.
Right. Yeah, it was.
And it's like, okay, weird flex, but okay.
My only guess with that is they can't have 6 episodes of the same note with Bumblebee. They have to give him a more significant tie to the Autobots, or why even have him along?
Like, yeah, I get that.
You know, and it's always, and that isn't that the hero's journey, and that Joseph Campbell. There's always the character who utterly does not deserve whatever heroic thing they get, and now they're responsible.
It's the character who doesn't want to go on an adventure, and they end up being the one on the adventure anyway.
Right.
I can't remember what the actual terminology is, but it's the call to action, the refusal, and then I can't remember what the terminology is after that. But that's Bumblebee in this series. He's the hero's journey, the monomyth character.
Yep, good old Luke Skywalker.
All right. Yeah.
Episode 5, Jetfire offers to help Optimus retrieve the Allspark. Bumblebee, Cog, and RC go on a mission for Energon, and Wheeljack tries to get the Ark to fly. So, yeah, so now we've got the one group that's trying to repair the Ark, one group trying to fix the space bridge, and one group trying to get the Allspark. It was a lot. There's a lot of balls in the air by episode 5, a lot to keep track of. And I'm not going to lie, at 44 years old, with some health issues, I was having a hard time following this Y7 cartoon.
You're not alone. At 35, in steeped in Transformers lore, I was having some trouble. Wait, okay, so they're on this mission, and then these guys are over here doing... As far as this episode goes, I thought it was interesting that they would introduce a character like RC out of nowhere right now. Like, knowing that it's a 6-episode series, you introduce a character, a fan favorite character like RC, out of nowhere in episode 5, and now she's super important.
There's another female Transformer that's involved in this, and I have no idea what her name is. She looked like Cup. And I thought it was maybe like a gender switch Cup, but it's that I don't know who this person is.
That was Moonracer.
Okay.
Who, again, back in G1, Alita 1 had a group of female Autobots on Cybertron, basically being the scrappy resistance, and she was one of those.
Okay. So not a gender switch Cup. Got it.
No. Unfortunately, Cup did not show up. Ugh. I was looking forward to seeing some old man.
Did I ever tell you the time that we... Shut up, Cup. All right, anything on episode 5?
Just that I liked the inclusion of the further inclusion of unaligned Transformers with Sound Blaster and his sort of backstory about being a failed clone of Soundwave.
Yeah, that was an interesting look for him. And I like the fact that instead of making him like a human beatbox, a human portable stereo. There's a word for this that I'm missing. You carry it on your shoulder, that sort of thing.
Boombox.
Boombox, thank you. Jesus Christ.
No problem.
instead of making him a boombox, they just made him literally a copy of Soundwave.
Well, interesting point. That's actually two different characters. Not to get pedantic here, but there's Sound Blaster, and then the one you're thinking of is just called Blaster.
Ah, okay.
Blaster's an Autobot. Sound Blaster was originally an upgraded version of Soundwave to sell more toys. I'm not joking. They got to season 3 and they're like, we need to sell more toys. Paint Soundwave black. We'll call him Sound Blaster.
Okay. So, and was he unaligned in the cartoon, or was he a Decepticon?
He was just Soundwave. Okay. He was literally just Soundwave.
Okay. Soundwave, but monochrome. Got it.
Bam. So, that was another interesting... They took a couple risks in this show, which I appreciated, in making certain characters different than what the fans would expect.
Off the top of your head, can you tell us about another risk you thought was interesting?
Well, it wasn't so much a risk as much as they sort of dumbed down Wheeljack a little bit in making him unable to fix the space bridge, because Wheeljack was the scientist. He was the guy that you went to fix things.
Right.
And then he would make a catapult that shoots smaller catapults that shoots dinosaurs.
Yeah, I remember
that
Wheeljack.
That was his character in the G1, is he was the mad
Scotty.
Scientist.
He was Scotty on Star Trek. You know, he fixed everything, and then he was an inventor. And I think they somewhat gave that role to Perceptor after the movie. But yeah, you're right. But they made him... They did not make him as helpful in this show. I think that was so they could give more to Ratchet.
Oh yeah, totally. Because Ratchet is a more popular character. He was a bigger force. He's been a bigger force in the series, or in the franchise, since G1. And so... they wanted to give him more to do than just being the medic.
All right, and then episode 6, this is it. This is our big conclusion to Siege. Optimus struggles to gain the Allspark. Megatron figures out Optimus's plan and orders an attack on the Autobots, who receive an unexpected assist. All right, so this ends, if I remember correctly, with them getting the Ark into the space bridge, and they are gone. And I believe they have the Allspark at the end of this, correct?
Well, they might be going after the Allspark, but the first thing that Optimus does as soon as the space bridge opens is he just chucks it in.
Oh, that's right. They threw the Allspark through the space bridge.
He's just like, yeet, and throws it.
Right. And so the Autobots... Now, the Autobots take off through the space bridge. I don't think the Decepticons are able to follow them because Omega Supreme is holding the line. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Which is, again, a departure from G1 that's going to make things pretty interesting. Another thing that I thought was interesting is... And this is something that just popped into my head when we were talking about the Allspark. Alita 1 thinks they're dead.
Yeah.
There's that scene where she's consoling one of the other Autobots and saying they didn't die in vain. And I'm like, oh shit, that's right. They think the Autobots are dead. They think that Optimus and the rest of the team are just space dust. Which is, I think, going to be interesting in the future installments to see how that works. If they're going to just devote all their time to Earth and not go back to Cybertron, if they're going to kind of go back and forth, or what they're going to do.
Well, according to the synopsis on the wiki, Chapter 2 is Earthrise. That'll be the next one that we'll be discussing at some point.
Right.
The Transformers leave Cybertron in search for the Allspark, leading the Autobots and Decepticons to land over Earth. Now, that was the whole premise of the series, was that everybody crashed, and the Autobots, I forget what wakes them up. It might be Spike and the construction crew, like, unearth their ship, and then their computer comes back to life and starts reviving the Autobots. Now, with the Decepticons in the show, I know theirs crashed into the ocean. I want to say it's like a tremor underneath the ocean or something that reawakens them, but they're both trapped in their ships, unconscious for, like, centuries, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's a long, long time. I can't remember exactly the time frame, but they're in there. Like, they land in the time of the dinosaurs, and they are excavated in, like, the far-flung future of 2020 or something like that.
Is that when it takes place?
It's something. It's 2000-something. I remember that vividly.
Well, in the movie, the year is 2005, which is 15 years ago.
Right. I missed the part where the giant robots were having a war on Earth back in 2005.
So, considering the show is the early 80s, it's somewhere between 81 and 85, I think, is the, it would be 81, 82 is when it starts. If they're saying the far future, it could have been the 90s for all we know.
That's true.
I'd have to go back and watch it. All right, your overall thoughts of these first six episodes and any predictions for what we're going to get in the next chapter, which is Earthrise?
My overall thoughts, I'm kind of two minds on this series. Like, I enjoyed some of the risks they took. I enjoyed, like, the portrayal of Bumblebee. I really enjoyed the whole storyline around Ultra Magnus. I don't want to get into too many spoilers about that, but it was very interesting, the decision they made with him, knowing what I know from the comics and how his storyline plays out in the comics. I thought it was an interesting potential nod to that. But at the same time, I thought that the portrayal of the Decepticons could have been a little better. Like, we had one Decepticon that was, you know, we had two Decepticons that were, had deep characters, and other than that, they were all sort of one-note bad guys.
Yeah, I thought we'd get more from Shockwave.
Yeah. Yep. I expected Soundwave to be just the robotic follower of Megatron, but Shockwave really doesn't do much either. He's there to be a mad scientist, and he does some mad scientist-y things, but nothing earth-shattering.
And no Scorponok. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah!
We had the Insecticons. We didn't have the Constructicons, and we did not have Scorponok, which I was shocked by.
I honestly think the lack of Scorponok was because they're releasing his new toy in the Earthrise line, and so they want to save him for that show.
Okay, that makes sense.
As far as the Constructicons or anything like that, I can't. It has to be a Hasbro mandate. It has to be a, we don't have figures of those guys out right now, so don't put them in the show.
Well, you know, what I remember from the show was when they needed more, when in continuity, when they needed more soldiers, the Autobots came up with the Dinobots first. And then opposite the Dinobots were the Insecticons, which the Insecticons are on this show, like, in the background somewhere, so that made no sense to me.
Right.
But then I think the second iteration of the Decepticons needing something was the Constructicons. And so it became a battle, you know, the Dinobots didn't merge into one larger robot or anything. But there was a lot of facing off of Devastator and the Dinobots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was sort of an escalation where, you know, the Autobots had the Dinobots, and the Dinobots were these, at first, unstoppable warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Decepticons came up with the Constructicons, who could form Devastator, and they were even more unstoppable than the Dinobots. And then it just kept escalating with more and more combiners from there.
Yeah. There was the Stunticons, which were the evil cars, and then whatever the good guy planes were.
Like, the aerial bots?
That's the ones. The aerial bots, yes.
Yeah, it was the aerial bots.
I think they kept going a few more after that, but, you know, they were not on the show all that much, and then we had the movie, so it didn't matter.
Right, because everybody died.
Yeah. Everyone.
Let's have a 5-minute sequence where everybody that you love dies.
Yeah, we're going to wipe out the entire first iteration toy line in one scene. Good stuff. I don't think they could get away with that now. Not in a major motion picture.
Oh, God, no. I mean, can you imagine them killing Optimus Prime in the first scene of a... let's just say, for instance, they go to Earth and they kill Optimus Prime off right away. Can you even imagine?
No. I can't... On television, yes. On television, there's a lot more bravery. But in a major motion picture where hundreds of millions of dollars are on the line, no one's killing Optimus Prime.
Right.
All right. Go ahead and plug your Twitch.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to know more, you can head over to twitch.tv/thefilmtwit, where I do stream... mostly single-player games, but I have been playing some more multiplayer games. And we're gearing up now for the release of Avengers on PS4. That's going to be taking over my channel for quite some time when that launches on the 1st of September. Because I'm in the early access. Other than that, we have a good time. We have some laughs. We have some tears. We talk about nonsense, something like what happened here today.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Cole. We'll have you back when Earthrise comes out. I don't think they've said when the next iteration is coming out, but we'll keep track of it here in the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network, and we'll give you a call when we're ready to go again with more Transformers stuff.
Sounds good.
In the meantime, you can check out myself and Jesse on the Metal Hammer of Doom. We reviewed live from the Doom Saloon Volume 2, which was Clutch performing from their practice space, the Doom Saloon. And we even contacted the guy who won the contest, who submitted a set list that they then played, and got his insights as to what he picked and why he picked it. So that was a fun show. We had a good time with that. Jesse and I talked about our own lists, and then I went rogue and played something from Jam Room because it wasn't getting enough love, in my opinion. Also, speaking of not getting enough love, I made Robert Winfrey watch the Kentucky Fried Movie. We watched it, and instead of doing a commentary over it, because he'd never seen it before, so, you know, we didn't want to talk too much over something he hadn't seen, we just watched the movie jointly using the Amazon Prime Watch Party app, and then we did a live reaction to that movie, and we broke it down sketch by sketch. We had a lot of fun. Robert was a trooper on that one. Next week, we have Avengers No Road Home. I'll have Chris Sheehan on for that. Myself and Alexis Haino will review Upload. And Jesse will be back on the Metal Hammer of Doom to review Avatar Hunter Gatherer. You can also check out Keep Your Hands Off Isoken, comic strip Umbrella Academy, Volume 1 and Season 1, and our next chapter in the history of heavyweight boxing, which we did on Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes. So that's all in the archives, plus many, many other shows. You can go check out some old source materials that Cole was on. Cole, do you remember which ones you've been on?
Oh, let's see. I was first on the Death and Rebirth of the DC Universe when we discussed the New 52 and the then new Rebirth. I was on RoboCop versus Terminator, which was fun. We had Alex Murphy flying naked through the internet. I know I've been on some others, but I can't, off the top of my head, come up with them. I was on one where we discussed just general DC stuff. It was Jesse was going through and talking with some of his previous guests about what they were reading and what they had been interested in. And that's, I think that's what I've been on.
Well, I heard a rumor about you. I heard a rumor that in December, you're going to want to be first in line to discuss My Little Pony Transformers Friendship in Disguise.
Yes! I am 100% here for that.
All right.
I read the first issue here recently, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but it was pretty great.
Terrific. Well, when the entire thing is finished, we'll discuss it on December 7th. How does that sound?
Sounds great to me.
All right. In the meantime, in between time, this has been TV Party Tonight. Be well, be safe, and behave.